What's up, everybody? I'm your host, Chris Hampton.
And this is Nate Drolet.
And we are here not only to answer how much skill is guaranteed with experience, but also to give some actionable advice on how we can make sure that you continue gaining new skills. And this is an interesting topic because, you know, on one hand, it's sort of the offshoot of the lazy advice, just climb more, right? Mm-hmm. People just assume that if you climb more, you're going to gain more technical skill. And at first, that sort of seems true, you know, for a short while. But then on the entire other side of this, there are people who will argue, like, well, obviously the pros have the most skill and they're not in the gym doing sloth monkeys and hover drills, you know?
Yeah.
So why should we do them? And like anything else on the internet, there's a black side and a white side, you know, two polar opposites, but the truth is actually somewhere in the middle. And just for the folks who are still sitting there and are like, of course you continue gaining skill with experience, I'm going to pick on traddies in particular as a top level example of how skill doesn't necessarily improve concurrently with experience. I think we all, when we're starting climbing, we're going into the gym, we know lots of trad climbers in the gym who, and it's not just trad climbers, but I'm picking on trad climbers, who have this air about them of like, I've been climbing longer than you, I know more than you, therefore thou shalt bow down to me, you know? And if we go and look at it, most of them have gotten stopped at like 5'10 or 5'11. Mm. And their reasoning is it's track climbing, so it's way harder. That's, you know, that's exactly like 5'13 sport, which is totally false.
Yeah.
And no matter how long they climb, they don't continue getting better. You know, 40 years climbing, 5'10 or 5'11. And there's nothing wrong with that if you're having a great time and that's what you want to do. But if you want to improve, in most cases, it's their own fault that they haven't gotten better. You know, just to be blunt about it, it's their own fault.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, there are so many examples of this out in the world. Like, you look at golf, people who play golf.
Yeah, that's a good example.
There's people who play every weekend, 40 years, never change their handicap.
Yeah.
You know, I think handwriting is a good example of this. Like, a lot of us just write the exact same way we did in, you know, eighth grade. Like, even if you keep writing by hand, you could journal every day, but if you're not intentional about trying to improve your handwriting, then it's not going to change.
Yeah, that's a neat example because, you know, I have a very specific memory, and I bet lots of people do too, of being like in fifth grade or something, or fourth grade, and just filling notebook pages, writing your name, like trying to figure out the coolest, best way to write your name. And then we stopped doing that. We never do it again.
Totally. Know? Exactly. It's like, and you know, people's signature might be good and everything else is just chaos.
Yeah, totally. Like,
yeah. Yeah. It's actually, and that's a funny example. I was thinking about this, like, another example I like of this is parking. Mm-hmm. So for me, the difference between parking like in a grocery store, I am terrible at that. Like I get somewhat close, but also I park at the back of a parking lot and I just walk in anyways. But I am very good at parallel parking.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's like parallel parking has like, you know, if I'm on a busy street, like I don't want to have to pull back out, deal with cars coming. So I know it was something where I was like, oh, I actually have to get good at this. So I paid a lot of attention and I'm very good at parallel parking. And a lot of people are this way. Like there are a lot of people who like even pride themselves on parallel parking. They're very good, but you see them just like whip into a normal spot and it's like they're on the line and they're like, yeah, good enough.
Yeah. Like, yeah, totally. Yeah. You're that guy at the grocery store all the way in the back, but taking up three spots because you're just cattywampus and
exactly,
you know, crossing all the lines.
Yeah. And I've parked my, like I used to drive a van. So it was like, at least I had that excuse. Now I actually have such a small car that it's like, I only get in just because it's such a small car that I'm like, oh, thank God I'm between the lines. It'd be embarrassing to like take up two spots as a Prius.
You can basically park where bicycles do.
Yes. Like, but I've parked thousands of times, but I've never seen a reason. Like I've never been like, okay, I've actually thought about this of like, I'm going to go to a parking lot and I'm actually just going to intentionally like figure out how far out do I need to turn, all this, but I haven't. So I'm terrible at it, but I crush parallel parking.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. What is it, do you think, that causes us to feel like we are going to just gain skill exponentially forever? I mean, certainly our first few days in the gym, you know, we're adapting immediately to these novel situations, or our first few times outside. And, you know, we're learning some very, very basic techniques that feel like major game changers. Yeah. You know, I think that has to be number one. Going from like 0 to 60 feels huge. And it is huge.
Mm. Yeah.
But it takes far more effort or intentional effort to go from 60 to 70. And we know that. We know that about everything. So why do we feel like we're going to just keep gaining skill?
Hope. you know, I mean, I think it's told to us a lot. Like, there's this thing that's said all the time, like, and I've been climbing long enough now to see this cycle not play out multiple times, but you'll see this where it's like there's a younger climber who just thrashes up the wall and they have maybe just some insane innate strength. Mm-hmm. Like you're just like, wow, this person's a monster. And everyone says the same thing about them every time. They always say, man, just wait until they get some technique.
Yeah.
Then they're going to climb really hard.
Yeah.
Look, I've been climbing, I don't know, like 19 years now. Most of them never get technique, like,
yeah,
because they have to actually stop and like assess and say, here's where I'm actually at. And they have to change what they're doing in order to get it. But I've seen this, man, I've seen this play out so many times. Like I was thinking about it, you know, there was these pair of brothers who started climbing, I think like 16, 17, within like 6 months could borderline canvas V8. And everyone said the same thing. They were like, God, man, the second they get footwork, the second their technique catches up to their strength, they're going to be crushing. And truly, like, I mean, they were like V12 strong in their first year of climbing. I remember seeing them again 5 years later. They climbed the same way, but maybe on V9s. Yeah, they had like notched up a bit, but technique never found them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you're in an environment like you're spending all your time in one gym or something like that, it becomes this fishbowl where it's like you only need the skills you've figured out to get to the top level in that place. Mm. Why become more skillful in any of the techniques you have if you can already do the hardest things in the gym? You know, there's no reason to keep gaining. But the people who are saying, just wait till their technique catches up with their strength, they still have a long way to go. So they're having to be more intentional. And they just think, oh, everyone is having to do the same things I do. Wait until they have to do it. But they may never have to do it.
Yeah. So I think that's one thing that happens is we tell this story around like just climb. You know, there is this belief. I mean, there are coaches who don't believe in doing skill work. They believe that if you just huck someone at the wall for enough thousands of moves a day, they will naturally improve just by, you know, purely doing the thing so much.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's why so many of the pros are not doing these drills or engaging in this like intention. I'm not going to say they're not engaging in intentional practice, but they don't necessarily call it a drill when they're in the gym, is because the time that we're in, the people that have risen to the top are still the ones who just naturally came by it, you know, eventually. Yeah. And maybe this generation is already climbing. Like, we're already seeing these young kids learning how to be intentional about new skills when they're 7 years old. And they'll continue that into adulthood. And those kids are going to just destroy the top level climbers of today, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we'll see the top level pros being really intentional about what things they're drilling instead of just being intentional climbers.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I like that you brought that up, like, because I think this is a big argument against skill work, is people look at professional climbers and they say, well, they don't do skill work. Like, why do I need to? You know, and I feel like you should pause for a second and say, just because a pro does something doesn't mean that it's good for you. Yeah. But there are several things that pros do really well, whether they can verbalize it or not. Like, honestly, like, they are intentional in the sense that they, you know, I like Jonathan Segrist, I think, put this really well. He talked about how he was like, you know, for 15B climbers, I'm probably one of the weakest, but my goal is to red point. Like, I train to red point. Anything I do, it is with the intention of sending. Like, so he is very intentional about, oh, he wants to climb harder. What does that take? Oh, he needs to be able to, you know, use lower feet. He needs to be able to be more powerful with only one arm and one leg on the wall at a time. Like, they're very good at dissecting the thing that they need to improve. Like, so even though they are going out and just climbing, they put so much thought into what they're doing. They may not call it skill work, but it is.
Yep. Yeah. And I think another thing that those pros do so well, and you know, maybe it's not intentional that this translates in the way it does, but I think they do something that is one of the reasons that our skill gains slow down so dramatically. And that's that we stop chasing novel situations. You know, we generally speaking, and I get it because we have limited time and limited resources to do this, but we start chasing slightly harder versions of the same situations. You know, we stay in the same gym and we want to do the next V grade up. We stay in the same climbing area and we want to do the next next harder route. We don't go to another area and say, I'm willing to step my grade down to learn this place. You know, I just had a conversation with Seb Buin for Written in Stone about the route Akira. And Seb talks about Akira was so groundbreaking for its time, even though we didn't recognize it as that back then, because Fred Ruling had pushed his levels in this one specific style so far. And Seb said, I wouldn't try a route like DNA if it weren't at my home crag. Like, I just couldn't do it. You know, it's so specific to me. I'm so good at that style because I've spent my whole life climbing it.
Yeah.
And other people coming here have a real disadvantage, you know? And Buster Martin talked about the same thing with Hubble. It's a real disadvantage. There's a reason only Alex Magos has traveled to Sheffield and done Hubble. No one else has done it on the road, on a trip.
Yeah, and people have tried.
People have tried, yeah. And we stop chasing those novel situations. We aren't willing to step our levels down in order to learn new things. And pros do it all the time.
Absolutely. I think this is something that when we first start climbing, a lot of people like, they enjoy the novelty of climbing because it is incredibly novel. Yeah. And they go in a lot of directions. And I think what ends up happening, to like piggyback on what you were just saying, what I see a lot is people really chase novelty. Like, they keep doing all these different situations. They're like, oh, I'm terrible at this, I'll go do this. And they keep going. And at some point, we all kind of have that urge to be like, but what if I just leaned into this one thing? What if I specialized? What if I tried to peak and reach from here? And everyone chooses a different spot. But sometimes, like a lot of times, this is where climbing progress goes to die. Like, you know, and there's nothing wrong with saying, I am very good at this. I'm going to specialize. I'm going to sharpen my sword for this specifically. And I want to see how far I can go. I think the thing that's tough about that is stepping off of that mountain, because that's a great peak that you might be able to reach. You might be able to shoot 2 V grades past everything else for this one moment. But it's hard to then say, oh, yes, I've done 3 V10s, but I'm a V7 climber in this style or those styles. Because we start telling ourselves these stories where we're like, oh, well, but how important must that be if I can do V10 like this? And before we know it, we put ourselves in a smaller and smaller box. And yeah, you just stop improving.
Yeah, totally. It's, you know, and I already said, I get it. And I do that. Like if you only have, let's use the red as an example, because we both are well-versed there and, and it's a popular area. But if you're a Red River climber, it makes total sense to really go deep into the resistant, pumpy, you know, learn how to rest between long boulder problem type of climbing. Get really good at that. You don't need tons of power there. You know, you don't need to be the strongest boulder to climb well in the red. You don't need the best technical skills to climb well in the red. So lean into the things that you need to climb there. But then I think even a place like the red that has a reputation as, you know, being very homogenous stylistically has lots of opportunities to allow the locals there to continue to grow. You know, I did a whole season there where I only climbed things that had hard boulder problem starts because I was really bad at it. You know, I was terrible at turning it on, you know, turning the dial all the way to 10 right off the ground. So I'm like, I'm going to go do these things that are super hard. And also I'm going to spend some time doing the really hard vertical slabby, interesting climbing that I've avoided my entire career here since I got to like 12A. You know, I climbed a ton of slabs until I got to 12A, and then it was like, bring on the jugs, you know?
Yeah.
And you can go back and break through your plateaus by not viewing the plateaus only in terms of grade, by saying, wow, my vertical climbing skills stopped at 12A, you know, because I just abandoned it at that point. Let me go level that up.
Yeah. You know, and I think a big issue that comes up is people don't see, you know, vert as relevant. They're like, well, I want to climb big, steep things or, you know, stuff like that. But man, if you want to be a 513 climber, you need to be a on-site 511 slab, 511 vert.
Yeah, totally.
Like a classic example of this is Cowboy King. Maybe the most iconic route in Lander visually, if nothing else. Like, man, and if y'all are listening to this, like Google a photo of Cowboy King in Lander. Stunning. You'll see this big sweeping roof over this incredible backdrop. Like, it's the kind of thing you see this and you're like, I don't care how hard this is. I want to be able to climb it. What you will never see in a photo is a 50-foot slab that's pretty techie that leads up to that big sweeping roof. Yeah. And man, that's going to hurt your feelings. Like, if you're like, ooh, I can pull steep 13 plus, like, you know, pockety climbing, or I can do, you know, steep V8. Cool. Can you climb mid 512 slab well, like, and not get gripped for the rest of the climb? I hope so. Otherwise, like, you're going to be stuck on the ground.
Yep. Yeah. I also think that, like, when you start climbing on those things that you abandoned or that you've gotten scared of or whatever, they seem below your grade, you know? A lot of the time, those require some some new specific thing of you, whether it's strength or mobility or whatever. You know, and you alluded to it with like Segrist is really good at saying, I need to get good at this one thing. You know, the pros are good at finding that one little thing that's a thread through all of the hard things that they're not able to do yet. And then they go collect that thing, you know, and suddenly they're able to do lots more. And I think that's it feels really slow to say, oh, my hip flexibility is holding me back on 512 vertical roots. I need to work mm-hmm. on that. Or my sloper strength is terrible. I don't really need it that much here in Lander. So why would I work on it? You know? And I think gaining those things, zeroing in on those small things that don't seem to have a big payoff and seem to take a lot of time to gain are another reason that our skills slow down so dramatically, because it takes a lot of time to gain that next level, to bust through whatever that plateau is.
Yes, absolutely. You know, another reason why we stop gaining skill, I mean, and this is the ultimate reason, is we go into autopilot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we get comfortable, we find this space to exist in where we're like, oh, this is what I do. I go climb on Tuesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays, Sundays. I, you know, go out and I do the exact same thing. And it becomes very routine. Like, and our brain loves being on autopilot. It loves automating things because learning is a lot of work. Like, figuring out how to do new things is very challenging. So if we have to do something repetitively or like all the time, our brain's just like, oh, let's automate that.
Yep.
The thing is, the second something becomes automatic and we exist in that autopilot zone, we stop learning. Like, yep. we're on cruise control. And this is that person who plays 40 years of golf without ever improving. Like, they are just yep. on autopilot.
And you might also, like, it's not that we stop learning entirely, but we stop being in control of the learning. You might learn mm-hmm. a thing by getting lucky. Like, you might see a thing and be like, oh, I didn't know that. Or you might luck upon a thing. And oftentimes that's enough to keep us going. Like, that one shot in golf that you got lucky in is enough to bring you back to pay your green fees or whatever the next time. You know, mm-hmm. because you think, oh, I just improved, you know, I just leveled the fuck up, but not really. You got lucky. And I think that's a big mistake, but it just keeps dragging us on because it happens enough that we think we're getting better.
Mm. So if these are all the reasons why it's hard to keep improving skill, what do you view as good ways to like keep the momentum going? Or if it's come to a stop, how do you hit the restart button?
Yeah, I think, you know, like you just said, being more intentional and, you know, not just letting it go on autopilot has to sort of permeate every answer we're about to give.
Totally.
Because I don't think there's anything you can do that just gets put on autopilot again that's going to continue helping. So you have to bring a level of intentionality, you know, the same level of intentionality that the best climbers do. You know, they're not in there just going through the motions. They don't climb the hardest thing in the world by just going through the motions. And for me, the number one thing to do and the first place I go is to search for novel situations the way that I did when I was a fairly new climber. And this can mean a lot of things. It can mean new rock. You know, if you're always climbing on sandstone, go somewhere where you can climb on granite. Might mean going to a whole new area. Might mean going to a new gym if that's what you have available, you know. And I think it's a really valuable thing that most people don't take advantage of. Like, go to a new city, you know, if it's the middle of the winter and you can't get outside, gather a couple of your climbing partners up and go to a gym in a nearby city.
Absolutely.
That way you get new setters, you know, new holds, change disciplines from time to time. And I'm very guilty of like going deep into one discipline for a long period of time and then trying to switch back over. So I'll like boulder for years and then go try to sport climb again and vice versa. And I think it's just better to boulder a little while sport climbing is your main thing, or sport climb a little while bouldering is your main thing. Switch those disciplines. Anything that will require you to refine some skill to perform better. And all of those things do. New rock, new areas, new gyms, new setters, discipline changes. It's going to require you to try to refine some things to climb harder.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Like changing your environment, essentially.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, and that I think is so great. Like that's, because that's what we do early on. Like, you know, your first time you're ever climbing, you see a sloper and you're just like, Jesus Christ, what is this? Like, huge learning experience. That's what it is. And that happens to us so many times. And then as we sort of understand everything around us to a basic level, it's easy to be like, well, no, I've got it, and stay comfortable right. and not keep hunting. But I think changing disciplines is good. Different rock types, different areas, climb with different partners even.
What you just said is really important. We tend to think we've got this technique, we've gained a certain level of skill in it, that's all there is, you know? But even switching the rock type that you're climbing on, even if it looks the same, let's take the dark side at the red, which is really pockety, and wild iris, really pockety, you know? Both are steep and pockety. So a lot of people are going to go, oh yeah, same skills. But there's so many differences. You know, wild iris, the pockets are much more slippery. You're going to have to be more active in the way that you grab them. Whereas at the dark side, you can be pretty passive in the way you're hanging on the pockets. You know, the Absolutely. Sandstone's going to do a lot of the work friction-wise. You also end up forced to do bigger pulls between pockets. Think more about your sequence because it's not littered with pockets like the dark side is. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to refine those big pulling skills without being able to pair up or tic-tac through a section. You're going to have to, because of those big pulls, you're going to have fewer foot options that are going to force you into positions you may not like. You know, so even things that look on the surface really similar are going to require new subtle skills. And the pro climbers, the best climbers, the people who, you know, gain tons of experience and seem to just continuously gain skill are the ones who are getting experience in different areas, different rock types, and always trying to be intentional and push themselves in all those arenas.
You know, and I think as you encounter these new situations, trying to approach improvement from as many different directions as possible is really helpful. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, honestly, just saying like, you know, if I'm going to throw out just a funny example, like the moon board, a lot of people get psyched on it. And actually, I think there's a reason why the moon board is sort of a revelation for a lot of people. It like kind of creates this new, almost like second season of their climbing.
Mm.
And it's because, yeah, maybe they've like always gone through the motions of all these things. And then they get on this board that climbs very differently than they've ever done before. And they're very excited. Also, it's kind of gamified with benchmarks. But we're also in this really cool time to where you can follow moonboarders on the internet. Like, you know, like you can follow Ravioli Biceps. You can follow Hosok Lee, all these different people. Like you can do a deep dive and you can say, okay, what are better tactics for the moonboard? What is a better mindset for approaching the moonboard? I mean, that's like, you know, one of my favorite things about your interview with Ravioli is like, he very much talks about the mindset around this of like, he plays the long game. Like this is, you know, this, that is very much a thing. Like how do we technically get better at it? And a lot of people look at it, they're like, ooh, you know, the moon board, I need to get better at really being really extended and really high feet and being explosive. And then lastly, how do we physically get better? So mental, physical, technical, tactical. And I think if we can approach problems in our climbing with that kind of four-prong approach, man, that's going to explode our skills. Like we're going to improve so much better. Like right now, it's very popular to look at things from purely a physical standpoint, or even like honestly, physical and then maybe technical afterwards. Like I think tactics kind of don't get enough credit, and mindset is like, get out of here. No one wants to talk about that. Like that's a little too woo-woo. Yeah. But I think those two, man, if you could learn how to use those to leverage skills, wow, you're going to go a lot further than just saying, oh, I'm bad at slopers. Let me go follow some arm wrestlers on Instagram and see what wrist exercises they do. I mean, don't get me wrong. I already do that too.
I think anytime during any of the process, not just while you're on the wall, that you feel uncomfortable or out of your depth or like you don't know exactly what to do here, you know, a little confused, any feeling like that, I think is a major opportunity for some leveling up of your skills that that probably is going to carry over to your on the wall skills. You know, if you're not used to climbing around lots of people and you're like, okay, I'm gonna go to Tennessee and go bouldering because I'm bad at compression climbing, and you're going to lean into compression climbing, and you go there and you go to get on Golden Shower and there's 15 people projecting it. You might feel totally comfortable trying the boulder itself when there's no people, but you walk up with 15 people there and all of a sudden you're really uncomfortable. You're not sure how to queue up. You're not sure, you know, how to go about brushing holds for other people or brushing after someone. You feel like, oh, am I telling them they have sweaty hands if I brush it right after they go? You know, there's all these like people skills
that
go into being able to pull onto the wall and be comfortable and try hard. And once you gain that skill, all of a sudden you get to talk to people about the beta they're using. You get to watch them climb and then ask them about it because they did something different than you or some skill you don't have. It can explode your ability to find novel situations in this one boulder, you know, if you lean into that, I'm uncomfortable when I walk up and I'm just going to keep walking because I'm nervous about climbing with all these people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that you brought this up. You know, I think something that's super important to do, like you brought up the idea of being uncomfortable, which is important. I mean, that is, we develop skill right at the edge of our abilities. Like just, you know, a lot of people think, oh, I need to go way outside of my comfort zone. But really not. Like there's actually decent research showing like you don't need to make something three times harder than what you're capable of. That's actually not helpful. Like it just needs to be a notch uncomfortable. Something I think that's really valuable is learning how to read these signals. So let's say, you know, I know people who are like, oh, I hate the mother load, like at the red. And here's the thing. It's like, okay, it makes you uncomfortable, like makes you nervous, whatever it is. And we need to learn, what is this actually? Like, do I not like the mother load? Because we will tell ourselves all the stories in the world to fit whatever narrative we want. People might say, I don't like the mother load because, you know, it's just full of pretentious people. It's like, is that the case? Or are you really intimidated by steep rock climbing? Like, and the fact that you go there and, wow, it's overwhelming. I remember the first time I went there, I got like butterflies. I was like, oh, there's nowhere to hide. Like this is an amphitheater of steep rock. And, you know, same thing. You go to Golden Harvest, that boulder where, it's, you know, there's going to be 20 people and you feel uncomfortable. Is that because, you know, you don't want to show up as someone who doesn't know what they're doing? Like, is that what makes you nervous? Is it talking to other people? Is it, do you feel like, oh, well, I climb hard in the gym and I want to climb hard outside, and what if they judge me? There's a million things that this could be. And if you can learn to pinpoint what it is, my God, your life's going to be so much easier.
Yeah, totally. You know, bringing up that, like, we learn right on the edges of our abilities, I think is a really good framework for folks. Because you have to think about the whole experience in terms of where in my ability level am I? It's not just a grade thing. You know, some people will hear right on the edge of your comfort level and they're going to go, okay, that means I learn best at B7. Mm. But that may not be the case. You know, if it's V7 slopers, that might feel like the same chaos that V11 crimps feels to you.
Yeah.
So you can't necessarily learn there. You might have to step that down to a place where you're not focused on the difficulty of the holds you're using or the moves you're using or the situation you're in. You know, maybe doing this drill, trying to be intentional about learning a specific skill in front of a bunch of people, isn't for you just yet. You know, maybe just getting in front of those people and climbing is enough of the skill.
Yeah.
You know, and then over time, you can start to work on other skills in front of people. So I think on like, warm-ups to upper moderates, you know, all the way to like mini projects that are going to take you a few sessions to do. I think that's a really interesting area for people to come in with real intention and really pay attention to how well they're climbing, repeat things over and over and try to make them better, you know, be really intentional about your climbing in those zones. Don't turn it off and go into autopilot there. As long as you're trying to learn a skill that still feels kind of uncomfortable for you, that's a really good opportunity. And I think this is where the separation between we are prescribing skill drills for people and the pros aren't necessarily doing them. It's to put you into this scenario that the pros are getting because they're going to so many different gyms and walls and different setters and different areas. We don't necessarily get those situations by staying in one gym. So we have to create them artificially and sort of force you into that situation. And for me, that's really what skill drills are. They're changing the constraints a little, putting you into an environment where you're forced to have to learn a new thing to make this thing work. And I think that's the place to do it. Low stress, low chaos, no send is at stake because it's a grade you know you can just do if you want to.
And that's a huge one.
Yeah, it takes a lot of the pressure off.
Yes, like a couple things. One, when we say autopilot, a lot of people might think like, oh, just cruiser mode. Like that's me just like doing really easy stuff. But autopilot can also be on hard climbs. Like there is this point like, with perfect repeats, I think actually one of the biggest mistakes people make is I think they go too hard on them.
I agree.
And so like maybe they're a V8 climber and they're like, well, I'm going to do perfect repeats on V6, V7. And it's like, they go up, they climb. It's like, okay, well, what happened? They're like, I don't know. I blacked out. I just wanted to send. It's like, okay, well, you switched out of like practice mode. Like if you like, that's cool that you repeated a thing that you've done before. What did we gain other than fatigue? Like you were better off. I mean, like, I feel like some people don't believe me when I say like, I'll do perfect repeats on V3, V4, V5. Like if you can't do perfect repeats on V3, even as like a double digit climber, I don't know. To me, that says something. Cause it's like, if I was like, hey, this is a 512A section of this sport climb, you need to get it dialed in to make it as effortless as possible. And if you're like, yeah, I'm just too damn strong for, you know, 12A to be anything other than what I'm already doing. And it's like, well, I don't think your strength is the problem. Like,
yeah, totally.
So autopilot isn't like, oh, you're just so cruiser that it's so easy that like, you're not getting good practice. Like we can also overshoot the mark and you just switch completely into, I'm just here to perform. Like, I'm locked in. I just want to send, you know, grab the next hold and go. Like, we get out of that zone of learning again.
Yeah, I've been climbing with a partner recently who's like just breaking into mid to upper 12s. And I had forgotten how prevalent this is, that they can, that it's so easy to switch out of being intentional and trying to learn something about a section and just switching into go mode. And like you said, blacking out and then not having a clue what just happened. You know, I like I'll watch this person climb and I'm like, do you know what you just did?
No.
And they're like, got to this hold. I'm like, yeah, but do you know how you got there?
No. Yeah.
Like, there's, I know, that's because you just totally blacked out and went into try as hard as possible mode. And the next time you go into that mode, you're going to do something different. And 7 times out of 10, you're going to fall because you're doing something different. Like, let's get out of that mode for a minute and learn something about this section. And it's, that's such a more advanced skill than I give it credit for.
Yeah. And it's tough, like keeping that composure. You know, I was listening to an interview with a very high level MMA coach, and he was saying something that separates the good from the great is the good fighters, when they go in, like when shit hits the fan, they switch over purely to emotion and instinct. Mm-hmm. You know, if he tries to have a conversation with him, it's like, hey, you know, the second round at this moment, like he got you in this lock, like what was going on there? And they'll just be like, I have no idea. But when he talks to great fighters, it's like they can tell you exactly what led to that moment, what was going on, what their options were, where they were trying to go. And yeah, being able to do that in our own climbing, like not just devolving to emotion and instinct and just becoming feral to try and get to the anchors or get to the top of a boulder. It's so important. Like, you know, something that Paige Claussen talks about all the time, and this is, you know, one of the hallmark pieces of advice that's simple but not easy, is to take climbs one move at a time. Just be there in that moment, just approach it 1 foot move at a time, one hand move at a time, and like be there with it. Oh, wow. I'd love to do it one day.
Yeah, totally. I also think we also have to engage with really hard things that are right at the limit of our comfort zones within our styles too. And those are going to be projects. You might think, because you're a great crimp climber, that you don't have anything else to gain when you're climbing on crimps. So projecting is purely a pursuit of another grade. But if you're regularly engaging on it while learning these other skills at slightly lower levels, it opens up opportunities to sort of solidify or cement your new skills at these like higher levels, to pressure test those new skills that you didn't see before. You didn't have the opportunity to do it because you didn't see it. Now you come into this hard crimp climb and you see, oh, there's a subtle little toe hook there that I never saw before, but now I've spent time working on V7s that have toe hooks and now I can see it and now I can level that up again. This is a harder toe hook than I've ever done before, but I can see it now. And I think that's a really important place to be. And we make the mistake of thinking we're only going to learn in one zone. And, you know, I had a conversation with Alex Magos earlier this season and Written in Stone. And I start each one of those conversations by telling the people a story about themselves. And I told Alex a story about a trip he had to Spain. And he came away, like his tick list was absurd. You know, he came away with a bunch of 515s and, you know, 14 C and D flashes and, you know, maybe a 15 B and a C or something like that. So this 2-week trip was like a lifetime tick list for most people.
Yeah.
And people will look at that who are climbing 513 and be like, oh, he can climb at his limit for 2 weeks. But that's not what was happening. If he's flashing 14C and onsighting 14B, that's not at his limit. Mm-hmm. He's regularly practicing well under his limit and pushing himself in other ways by trying to flash, trying to onsight, you know, trying to do a first ascent of a 15A or 15B that's at a slightly lower level than his top level, you know. The pros are regularly doing that, but because they're on a level so much higher than us, it's hard for us to recognize the subtleties there.
Yeah, absolutely. It, you know, I, in this same exact vein, I remember when Sasha DeJulian was like at her peak, like winning World Cups, like, you know, climbing super hard outside. There was this one, like, just news blurb of like, oh, Sasha DeJulian had a good day. And I think she did, she like climbed a new 14C, did a 14B second go, did a 13D second go, onsighted like 2 13Cs and onsighted a 13B.
Yeah.
And I thought about this. I was like, okay, her top red point is like 14D. I was like, what is my equivalent of that? Like, let's drop that down. And I was like, I would not tie in. Like, gun to my head, if people are like, Nate, you got to tie in to 114A, 213Ds, like twice each, like, you know, all these things going down, I'd be like, no, like, that's not going to happen. Like, and that was like kind of a cool thing to think about, like, because it is like the numbers are so high that it's almost easy to just be like, oh, that's just absurd. You know, there's a video of Drew Ruana going to Joe's Valley and doing like 16 double digit boulders in a weekend. And you're like, that's crazy. But it's like, well, Drew was probably, he was like V15 strong at the time, if not stronger. Like, he's just so wildly strong and good of a climber. It's like, well, what is my equivalent? And like, have I ever tried to go do, you know, 16 V8s? Jesus Christ, that sounds horrifying. like in a weekend, or V8, V9s? Like, yeah, but it's one of those things that I like the way you put it. It is so far above us oftentimes, because these grades are crazy, that we just separate it in our mind. We're like, that's something else. But we don't stop and say like, oh, like Alex Magos has done over 2,000 climbs, 13B and harder. What is my equivalent? Like, you know, have I done 2,000 climbs, 12A and harder? Definitely not. Like,
Yeah, it's so hard to make those comparisons. And it's so easy to get discouraged by those comparisons. You know, years ago, I had this like 2 hour long conversation with Alex Honnold, where he kept comparing himself to Alex Magos. Well, he warms up on 14D. I just want to climb one. I'm like, I know, but that's not his top level, Alex. It's not even close to his top level. You are warming up on something that other people want to do just one of.
You know?
Stop the comparison without comparing all the factors. If we compare Drew Ruana's 2 week trip, do we get that many 2 week trips? We have, most people have one opportunity to take 2 weeks off once a year. Drew Ruana gets to try that sort of trip whenever he wants, basically. Maybe not now, he's full-time studenting, but a lot of the pros get to try these kind of trips over and over, and they don't succeed. You know, Alex Magos doesn't have trips like that trip to Spain every time he goes on a trip. Sometimes he walks away totally empty-handed. And we have to recognize that too, you know? Can our lifetime best trip be similar to that? Maybe, as long as we compare all the factors. You know, I think that's a reason we get slowed down, and it's a thing that if we do well, we can remain intentional about it instead of just getting discouraged.
You know, and something I want to say about intention, like, y'all, here's the thing. Rock climbers are really good at being consistent, of showing up time after time. Honestly, it's more of an addiction than anything. Like, I wouldn't call this like some wonderful habit loop that we've developed. It's just like, we're like, oh, this is what I do Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, whatever. And it's fun and it's great. It's a lovely hobby. It keeps you healthy. But we are, if you're already showing up literally to get better and to have an intention, all you have to do is set an intention. Like pause before your session. If you're already going to climb a 2-hour session anyways, you might as well stop for 2 minutes and say, what do I want to get out of today? Like, what would make today, what would make me 1% better today? What would make me 0.1% better today? And then when you're done at the very end of the session, stop, you know, 3 to 5 minutes, and there's great research to back this up. Stop and say, okay, like, how did that go? Like, what did I gain out of this? What did I learn? What could have gone better? What did I do well? Man, like those two things, like punctuate your sessions with setting an intention and then kind of reflecting afterwards on how it went. I mean, that's practically free. Like, you're already going to be there doing the thing. You might as well make it more impactful.
Totally, totally. When we designed our process journal, I think it was designed around this idea.
Yeah. Like,
walk in with an intention. Even better if your intention can be based on how things went the last time and how you're going to improve them. And then, you know, ask yourself those questions. What went well? What went didn't well? Or what didn't go well? What went didn't well? That's an interesting sentence. What didn't go well? You know, did I stick to my intention? When did I get sidetracked and how?
Great questions.
And how can I make that better the next time? And I'm really glad you started this talking about consistency, because I bristle a little bit every time I see somebody be like, consistency is king. Well, consistency, if you're just on autopilot, is not king.
Yeah.
It's making you tired, maybe. But after the very beginning, after that first like honeymoon period, consistency isn't enough. It's not going to do it for you when it comes to gaining more skill. You're going to have to be intentional about it.
I could not agree more. Like, I think that is, in a lot of cases, yes, consistency, keep showing up, like, means so much.
That's the first step.
That is the first step. Then at a certain point, we have to redefine, what does it mean to show up? Like, is showing up just walking through the door and just, going on autopilot, climbing for fun? Or does showing up mean I have an intention? I'm going to work on these things that make me a little uncomfortable. Like, and not everything has to be uncomfortable. Like, that said, honestly, like, you know, the more you do this, the more you start to find value in these things of kind of pushing against these barriers. Like, and especially if you stop and reflect, I find this helps me a lot. Like, if I have sessions where I'm like, oh God, man, I just got my lunch money stolen for the last 2 hours. And then if I stop and actually reflect, I'll be like, man, I got a lot of good reps in. That was pretty cool. Like, and actually get really excited about it. Like, the more you do this, the better you get at reframing it. But yeah, like, you need to define, what does showing up and being consistent actually mean? Because it's not just being in the door anymore.
Yeah. You know, along that same lines, like, just being consistent isn't enough. I think it's the same when we engage with these drills. You know, if you're someone who's done our proven plans or worked with us directly, you've seen some of the drills that we do. And I think over time, if you're consistent about doing those drills, they become a little less effective as soon as you start turning them into autopilot.
Absolutely.
And one of the things I've been telling my clients when they're engaging in these drills is, don't just do the drill. Don't just go through the motions. There are going to be lots of moves when you're doing these drills. Let's say a half speed drill. I want you to climb this boulder problem at half speed, very sloth-like, you know, continuous movement, but I want it at half speed. And some of the moves you do are going to be easy like that. You're not going to gain a whole lot from them. But as soon as you come across a move that's like, oh, that was harder than I expected at half speed, stop there. That's an opportunity. Let's work on that move a little bit. You know, try to slow it down a little more. You know, see what the like hitch is in trying to do this half speed. And now, can I make it a little harder? You know, can I go to the next hold instead? Or can I just find another move that's like this? Can I spot one from standing on the ground? And then can I try that move? These little like mini session projects, like, it, you know, it might take you 5 tries to really hit it at half speed. That's a real opportunity to learn how to slow down and control a move when it's needed, but your like natural impulse is to use a little momentum. So I ask people to wait, you know, be aware of when they start to feel uncomfortable, when it starts to feel hard, and then stick in that spot for just a little while, you know, spend 10 minutes there and then move on again. I think that's a way to break up that autopilot when you're doing drills.
Absolutely. And I love this. You know, I can't remember if we've actually had this board meeting yet, or if this was something that's just been on the list, but the idea of like tried and true or just tradition, like this idea of
still on the list, I think.
Okay. I think so too. But it's this idea of like, is this something that we do because it works or because we just always do it? You know, one of my favorite examples in sport is in ice hockey. Forever before indoor ice rinks existed, you would practice on ice through the winter. And then in the summer months, you'd practice with field hockey. And then even once indoor ice rinks became a thing, a lot of coaches kept practicing through the summer months with field hockey. And they're like, no, this is how you have to do it. Like, but it was truly just tradition.
Right.
We do a lot of things in climbing without even realizing it. But one that cracks me up more than anything is the need to do boulders in their entirety.
Yeah.
Like, even just as warm-ups, like warming up on the board, literally pull on and do 2 moves and then drop. It doesn't matter what 2 moves. Like, people will swipe for 5 minutes trying to find the right next boulder problem that they can do from the sit to the top, you know, further 8th warm up. And it's like, literally just like find something where there's 2 or 3 moves that look good. Maybe do that 2 or 3 times. Do a single move. It'd be like lifting weights and being like, I have to do 8 repetitions every single set. Like, well, no, that's terrible. But doing entire boulders is something that is this tradition that we like, and it makes sense because that is climbing, like start at the bottom, go to the top. But one of my favorite little skill iterations that I've started including for people and that I've done for years, it's like a poor man's perfect repeat. So instead of going up a climb and saying, oh, I could fix all these things, I'm going to do it 4 or 5 times. I love that, but a lot of people don't have the attention span or the want, frankly. Yep. So what I'll have people do is it's like, okay, go up this warm up. And it's exactly like what you just said. Oh, there's that one move that like you just kind of like muscled your way through. We'll drop like, okay, cool. Hop off. Let's just repeat that move 1, 2, 3 times until you feel like that's how I should have been doing it. You know, yep. And next time, if you feel like repeating the climb, cool. Do it the next time you're in as part of your warm-up again and do it the new way. But yep. We don't have to repeat the entire climb every time. Just, you know, if you have a boulder that's 8 moves long and only 1 gives you trouble, I would hope you just work on the 1 move because we don't need to do, you know, 64 moves if we can just do 1 move 8 times and really lock it in.
Yeah. Yeah. And this type of practice isn't going to just make you better at that one move. It also makes you better at sending things faster because that's a massive skill that comes into play when you're red pointing hard things, is being able to zero in on what is it about this that seems hard to me and improve that thing over a few attempts and then just have it locked in for the rest of the attempts. That's such a huge part of sending things that gets skipped over because people don't like to confront the one move that they can do, but feels a little weird. Mm-hmm. We just want to do it and get it over with.
Yes. Like that is so much of climbing, even with boulders, like how efficient can you make all of the moves, not just the one crux move?
Yeah. Anything else from you? Anything we missed here that we should be talking about?
I think we kind of did a pretty good job on this. I think setting intentions is just important. Frankly, like trying to get more skills, like go a little more broad than you think you might need. And we're going to talk more about this in our how to self-assess episode. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of us shoot a little too narrow for we're like, oh, these are the skills I need. And it's very hard to realize how valuable skills are until you have them. Like until we have them and look back in hindsight, it's hard to realize how useful they would have been.
Yeah.
Like, man, there's sometimes, you know, you go back to old Boulder problems and you're like, Jesus, like 2009, Nate was really strong and tenacious, but he was bad at rock climbing. Like he missed all of these things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we live in a replica economy here, for lack of a better word, you know. Everybody just wants to get good at the one move that's hard. When in reality, there's something more broad behind that being hard for you, you know? So I agree. And you know, one thing I think we didn't do in this episode is actually answer the main question of how much skill is guaranteed with experience. For me, the answer is none. There is no skill guaranteed with experience. I think it comes closer to being guaranteed that you can collect some techniques. You know, you can learn what a heel hook is. You can learn what a drop knee is. And frankly, you can collect most of the rock climbing techniques in one session if you want to cram it all in. But it doesn't mean you're going to have skill with any of them. For that, I think you need both experience and intention. And if you come in with intention all the time, that you don't need that much experience to get really good at it. You know, I think we see that with young rock climbers or even just climbers who are starting nowadays. Like they might be 25 years old, but they go into the gym and start climbing now versus when we started climbing, and they get so much better, so much faster because they've got opportunities to climb on so many different novel terrains, angles, hold types, different boards that have different built-in styles. You know, they have so many more opportunities to get better, and they come in, they want to get better, they engage in it all, and they get better fast.
Absolutely. I agree with you here. I think skill is not guaranteed. I think climbing is set up to give you some initially because it's so novel and a lot of us are attracted to that. Not everyone is, but yeah, intention goes so far. You know, I worked, with a climber who got to V12 in 2 years, and we were doing a bunch of in-person work together. And when we first started talking, I was like, oh, you got to V12 in 2 years, like immediately. And he had like some high level sports backgrounds prior, but I was like, oh, he's probably like naturally very athletic and all this. But man, the more we talked, I was like, oh, you show up with a plan every day and you have so much intention behind everything. And it was like, no, this is like, this was earned. Anytime I said something, he'd be like, hey, can you phrase that another way? I want to make sure I absolutely understand it. Like, okay, like that's cool. How do I apply this in this situation and also that situation? Like, yeah, it was inspiring, honestly, to be like, oh, this is cool. Like, this is someone who brings a high level of intention every day that they climb. And man, it paid off. Like, and it is continuing to pay off.
Yep. Change your definition of showing up. I think that's so important. All right. You can get more from Nate on Instagram and YouTube by searching Nate Drolet. And if you're new here, that's Drolet. There is no A-Y at the end of Drolet. And I'm at Power Company Climbing, and we're already several episodes deep into a multi-month exploration of how we learn to better move as climbers. So go back if you need to. That's happening across the podcast, YouTube, Instagram, blogs, everywhere. We're going deep here. I'll be collecting and connecting all of those dots in our newsletter, The Current. So if you aren't subscribed already, you can find that link right there in your show notes as well, alongside other episodes and blog posts that are related to today's conversation. Just like an old board meeting, that's actually one of our favorites. It's come up several times in episodes, and that's quality versus quantity. That was a great episode. You'll find that link there. And another that is the worst advice we got as beginners. You'll find that link too. You'll also find a link to our movement practice resource page where we have curated rabbit holes for you to go down so you can learn, grow, and excel. This time,